Welcome to Vertical MRO with yours truly as the host, Val Medved, co-hosting with me, Mr. John Gray of Hangar Z. In this two-episode interview, we have the privilege of shining a spotlight onto one of many unsung heroes of our industry. That's right, maintenance technicians. They are the backbone of our aviation industry, ensuring the safety and reliability of aircraft day in, day out. Today, I'm extremely excited to introduce Faith Ortega, a prominent figure in the maintenance technician community, known to many through her social media platform as How to Helicopter. Faith's journey into aviation maintenance began at Southern Illinois University, renowned for its outstanding aviation program. There, she earned her Bachelor of Applied Science degree in Aviation Technologies with a specialization in helicopters, culminating in her A&P certification. For those who are unfamiliar with the intricacies of a maintenance technician world, the A&P certification signifies expertise in maintaining, repairing aircraft, airframes, engines, and related systems. On the other hand, the IA, the inspection authorization, represents a higher level of certification, granting the authority to approve annual inspections and sign off on major repairs and alterations, which Faith is now approved and was recently certified to do so. Congratulations. She's with AeroEvac doing it. She embarked on her career as an A&P at Helicopters, Inc., where she immersed herself in the ENG, electronic news gathering industry, gaining invaluable experience. Transitioning to the public safety aviation sector, Faith now serves as a HEMS, or Helicopter Emergency Medical Services, base mechanic, contributing to critical missions that save lives. Beyond her professional endeavors, Faith is a passionate advocate for maintenance technician community. Through her social media platform, which she's on quite often, she highlights the vital work of technicians and actively engages in recruiting the next generation of talent. Additionally, Faith generously volunteers her time at Gateway Youth Aeronautical Foundation, nurturing aspiring aviators and young minds. Join us as we delve into Faith's inspiring journey, her contributions to maintenance technician field, and her dedication to shaping the future of aviation. This is Vertical MRO. Special thanks going out to our sponsors, Bell Helicopters and Precision Aviation Group.
Welcome to the Vertical MRO Podcast, brought to you by Vertical Helicasts.
All right, everyone, you're under contact. You're cleared to the Bravo.
The Vertical MRO Podcast explores the fascinating world of helicopter maintenance, repair, and overhaul with your host, Val Medved.
Atlanta Altimeter 3029, approved as requested.
The podcast features helicopter technicians, mechanics, engineers, and MRO experts who share invaluable industry insight, knowledge, and stories that will inspire current and aspiring industry maintainers.
Here we are, Vertical MRO. Let me introduce myself. My name is Val Medved, and with me is my ever studious buddy, John Gray.
Hey, what's going on, sir? Good to see you.
Good to see you. It was good seeing you last week at HA, or Verticon, I should say now. Sorry,
yeah.
It's an old habit there.
Yeah, it's challenging for me out the gate to try and... I'm still saying HAI because I feel like 2024 was still HAI. So I'm writing, good to see you at HAI. I know next year's going to be Verticon, but for this year, it's HAI because it's the same thing from like 23 to 24. Whenever the year changes, I'm still writing the year prior for like half the year. Oh.
You know what? I got to tell you, HAI is, I know we grew up with that, but Verticon just sounds like a cool Transformers name. If you have.
Yeah, it does sound like a cool name.
Good to see you again, buddy. Good to see you. So
absolutely.
On the show today, we have someone that's really popular in a bunch of different fields, does a hell of a job with line maintenance, aircraft inspections, pre-buys, and social media influencer extraordinaire. I feel like there should be a mic hanging down here. I feel like being like a UFC. Should be like UFC type of intro. Ladies and gentlemen, can I introduce you to Faith Ortega? Hands of applause to Faith. Yeah. Welcome
to
the show, Faith.
You guys hyped me up too much. Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Good having you on Friday Vibes. John and I were just kind of discussing offline here. It's been one of those weeks, and whether this gets kind of casted on a Friday, but let's just give it the good Friday vibes today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
For us here in Southern California, the mountains of Southern California, we had kind of a freak snowstorm that came through last night, and my kids got a snow day today.
Oh.
So Friday for them kicked off really well. In fact,
look at the two Midwesterners going, a snow day in California.
Yeah. You know, I live at about 6,000 feet in the mountains of Southern California, outside of LA, an hour and a half outside of LA. And we get all four seasons in snow, and yeah, people are like, you live in Southern California and get snow? People are kind of taken aback. But anyways, it's Friday and I'm happy.
Yeah. Well, mind you, we caught Faith still kind of in the office there, but I'm like Samuel Jackson. I'm going to ask you, what's in your cup? Cheers. So prost.
Cheers.
Interesting story about this big stein. I was in Stuttgart a couple of years ago. And we had dinner at this one restaurant that was attached to the hotel, and somebody thought it'd be cool to pull a fire alarm. And about 2/3 of the people vacated their dinners and their checks.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. I came back and I looked at the waiter. I'm like, buddy, you're going to be out. He goes, yeah. So we stuck around. We paid our bill. And as I'm holding this stein of beer, he goes, in his German, best German accent, he goes, "Uns tickets home. It's a memento for you." I was like,
no.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Germany is on the bucket list for me, and getting a stein in person is definitely on the bucket list as well.
Yeah, once you're driving out there, stay to the right side. They will flash you with the high beams, I promise you. I promise you.
Speaking Faith, of have you been to Germany or Europe in general?
I've been to Europe. Okay. My husband and I actually, we went to Spain this last summer. So that was a really cool trip. But he's actually going to Oktoberfest this September. So he's going with a bunch of guys, and he's super excited. So with my
Germany,
PTO and other stuff, yeah, he's going to go. They're so amped up for it. So
that's cool.
But yeah, that'll be a good one. But yeah, I've been there, and my best friend, she's actually Italian, so I got to stay with her and her grandmother in Italy. So seeing it firsthand and not in a tourism aspect was actually really cool.
Oh, I bet.
One of my big goals is to get to European Rotors. You know, they bounce different countries where they host it, and I think it was in Germany.
Madrid.
Or was
this
in
past
Spain.
Year. Yeah, yeah.
Spain. Okay. So I'm curious to see where the next one is, but usually with PTO and everything else and juggling HAI, which is now VAI Verticon. So it's right. Like, I need more PTO.
Yeah. I believe it's in, because we were just scheduling out the year, mapping out the year. It's in Amsterdam this year at the end of November, I believe. Mid-November, end of November. I don't know what can go wrong in Amsterdam. Just saying.
So I've actually never been to Europe. So if I get to go this year to that show, it'll be my first time. So I'm looking forward to that.
It's awesome.
It was pretty kick-ass in Madrid. It was pretty kick-ass in Madrid. Not
was
gonna
it?
Lie to you. So yeah. In Amsterdam, they were already selling floor space there last year. So it's going to be a great show.
Once you vacation across the pond, that's where you seem to want to go. I mean, there's so much stuff here in the States. Don't get me wrong. Like, we have, you know, even some of the guys that came over to the expo this year that were from Australia were like, this country's huge. And we're like, I'm like, yeah, there's a lot to see. And there's so many different, you know, terrain and just, you know, weather. But yeah, in Europe, it's just crazy how we drive 4 or 5 hours and can cross 2 or 3 states. And over there, it's 2 or 3 countries. So
that's
it
right.
really
that's
puts
right.
some stuff into perspective for you.
That's a big compliment coming from Australians too, because they have a vast amount of country, but probably not occupied by a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And to all my Aussie listeners, I apologize in advance when I see you. So I trolled you a little bit. So I kind of did. I heard a couple of episodes there. So we're going to go into some icebreakers. I hope you don't mind that. You're good with that.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Country fan, Garth Brooks or Dwight Yoakam?
I've seen Dwight Yoakam. I've actually seen him. He opened for Eric Church one time, and that was really good.
Yeah.
But I've heard, if you're a Garth Brooks fan, you're a Garth Brooks fan. And
yeah.
I really do like Garth Brooks. I'm going to say Garth Brooks, actually, though.
Okay. Okay. John?
Yeah, Garth Brooks. Dwight Yoakam's amazing. For me, he's kind of like the classic country. You know, he represents kind of the old school and the old guard. And I love that.
Yep.
But I grew up listening to Garth Brooks. It's funny. You know, my mom listened to country as I grew up, and I hated it when I was a kid. In fact, I remember saying, I will never listen to country ever. I hate it. And now that's the majority of what I listen to. But we went to Padres Stadium in San Diego a year ago, February, and saw Garth in person down there in a concert. And it was raining during the concert. It was awesome. Such a good concert. So 100% going to go with Garth Brooks there.
Garth Brooks in the rain. That's just another country song in the works.
It is, for sure. It was awesome.
Secondly, I understood you have you spoke about some exotic cars. So I want to ask you there, Ferrari, Audi, or Lambo?
I'm going to say Audi.
Mm.
I really love the R8s. I think the R8s are super cool. There's actually a guy here locally at the airport that has one. I'm always drooling when he drives by, but but yeah, I would have to say Audi for me.
They got that ceramic coating for that, for people drooling on their exotic cars, right? So I get it. John, I'm going to put you out as a Ferrari type.
Well, you know, it's funny. You and I actually talked about this a little while ago. Our family has kind of fallen in love with Audis. And
Oh,
we still have a Q7. We just got rid of an A6. So at one time we had a lot of liability in our hands as far as maintenance goes, having both the A6 and the Q7 at the same time.
Oh yeah.
It's funny. It took the Q7 in, and within about 2 weeks of that Q7 coming out, the A6 goes back into that same shop. So it's no lie that the A6 is there. The Audis are beautiful, but man, they're maintenance intensive.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to put that probably with most of the European cars out there. It's there. Once they're off of warranty, it's like, Kissia.
Yeah. That's definitely a lease worthy car. I'm not big on the leases, but
yeah,
but I think that's a lease worthy vehicle there.
Yeah. And I live central Canada here, and like the potholes around these parts out here, especially after winters that we have, none of these cars would survive. So if I can add a caveat to it, I would say Toyota.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. My Tacoma takes a beating.
What's your daily driver, Faith?
I have a Honda Civic, and as much as I used to drive as a base mechanic, going from place to place, mileage was a huge factor. So my little Honda Civic hatchback gets like almost 40 to the gallon, which
I
love that car. If something happened to the car, I would buy the exact same car again. It's a 2019, so it does me good.
Bulletproof cars, absolutely excellent cars. I cannot, both my kids drive Hondas, and my oldest son has a Honda Civic Si, and he got into a pretty bad wreck last year, but we at least tested the safety features, and he found an identical car online, bought it. I said, well, at least know what the safety features are all about. So I'm with you 100% on the Honda Civics.
Yeah, it's awesome car.
When I worked for the police department, I had about a 46 mile trip to the hangar and then back. So roughly 100 miles a day. So I was with you. I was always looking for a vehicle that was efficient with fuel. You'd run those things into the ground, just driving them all over the place. So it didn't make sense that at the time to have anything that was decent.
My whole family is like Chevy or die. And so when I pulled up with this Honda Civic, my dad worked at a Chevy dealership my whole life. And I was like, he's going to disown me. Like, this is it. This is,
no
this is
the
make or the break
front.
Moment.
You're no longer family.
Yeah. I thought, and it's so funny because we went on a road trip and we took my car, and he was like, you know, this thing actually is kind of cool. It's not bad. Like, I could tell it was, he liked it. He would never fully admit it, but.
It was creeping into his heart. It was coming in, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Dad's coming around. He's coming around. Good. 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 Last but not least, which actor would play you in the movie of your life, past or present?
The Vertical MRO podcast is powered by Vertical Magazine, the rotorcraft industry's number one trusted multimedia resource. Visit Vertical Mag Media on YouTube to gain access to exclusive videos featuring operators in the field and more unique content from the pages of Vertical. Subscribe today to stay informed and inspired.
I'm going to say, and this is personality-wise, just from what I can see, I'm going to say Emma Stone or Jennifer Lawrence, because they're both kind of dorks.
Okay.
But
okay.
They like to have fun. So, not off of looks. I don't look like either of those people. But yeah, they just seem like they're really fun. I would want to hang out with them. So
that's cool.
John?
So John, when I think of that question, I can't think of a person necessarily, but I can think of a character from a movie, which I guess qualifies. So I guess the person is Tom Hanks, but the character is Forrest Gump. I feel like
that's I thought that was gonna go.
Me and you both, right?
I find myself in these situations, in these opportunities that I come across. I'm like, how did I end up here? And I just, it's by happenstance all the time. And I'm like, man, nobody would believe me. I feel like Forrest Gump sitting on a bench telling somebody my life story, and it doesn't make any sense. And they don't believe you, but it's true. So that's that's what I go with.
That's fair.
I'll have to go with, this is a two-phaser for me. Jim Carrey in my early days and Chris Farley in my later days.
Chris Farley was solid, man. He was one of my favorites.
Yeah. So, slapstick comedy. I still kind of got to get away with it. You make fun of yourself first and then kind of have everybody laugh with you or at you. It's a kind of a balancing act. I get it.
When Tommy Boy came out, I was in high school.
Such a great movie.
Oh, man. One of my favorites. I don't think I've laughed as hard in the movie theater as I did when I saw that movie. So super
that
sad.
That is the most quoted movie in our household. Like for Tommy sure. Boy? I think the last time you guys interviewed me, that's what I said my favorite movie was, that was one of the icebreakers. So that was my movie. And you and Jeff were like, yes.
Yes.
Such a good one. What's your favorite scene?
Probably when he hits him with a 2x4 and he's like, and then he finally comes to and he's like, it hurts, not here so much, just right here. It's just like black and purple.
I cry laughing when he peels the door backwards at the gas station and he goes, what did you do? I die at that moment right there.
You know, it's funny is I relate that to being a kid. I remember breaking one of my mom. She had a ceramic figurine. It was up on the fireplace and it fell off. I knocked it off and it broke. And I placed it back on top of the mantle. I pieed it back together and my brother touched it and it fell apart. And it was the same thing. Like, what'd you do?
Oh, yeah.
Very similar thing.
Pass the blame. So
I can definitely relate to that scene.
That's so good. I'm a single child, so I can only blame myself. So it was...
Oh, no.
Yeah. How did that get broken? I don't know. That's just what it was what I got here. What did I do?
Yeah, that's rough.
Did some good reading up on you. First and foremost, I got to tell you, I'm a fan follower. I see you on your social media, so good job on that. But outside of kind of being like a good Midwestern start for your career and all this, just kind of give us a kind of a walkthrough of where this all began and where it's kind of going and where do you think you'll be, kind of just where it's going first and foremost and how you started is kind of going to be the great and interesting story. I've heard it twice now, but I'd love to hear it again.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like when John was saying he just ended up where he ended up and, you know, it was a lot of people kind of pointing you in that direction. I have a very similar story. So I didn't grow up with an aviation background like some folks do or have the luckiness of having. My dad was actually an auto body guy. So he took care of cars, but he tinkered and was a mechanic in his spare time. He used to restore old jet boats. So he didn't really... I think he got burnt out from cars when he was my age. He just, you know, that's what everybody was doing at the time. And we lived near the river and near a lot of lakes and we would actually restore old jet boats. So that was a lot of fun and I enjoyed it. I didn't have these big aspirations to be a helicopter mechanic specifically, but I really enjoyed working with my dad and he included me with everything he did and everywhere he went. So it was kind of a sidekick. I knew I wanted to work with my hands. So when I was in high school, I took Votech. I was in school for half the day and then left and went to an automotive class at a local high school nearby. And so did that, really enjoyed it. And I was trying to figure out what I could do that would make me niche and make me high of value. I was like, okay, maybe I'll go in the military, be a diesel mechanic. You know, maybe I'll work on boats. Maybe I'll go move near the ocean. I wasn't really sure. And a good friend of mine, her mother was actually a mechanic for American Airlines. She was like, hey, you know, if you're that serious about it, you should really look into being an aircraft mechanic. There's a lot of opportunity to travel. I know you want to travel and haven't got to do that much yet. Started looking at schools nearby. And I'm from, I say St. Louis, Missouri, but I'm about an hour west. Because that's the only reference point you really got I'm at.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out, you know, are there any schools nearby that offer aviation maintenance degrees? Because I knew nothing. I didn't know I needed an A&P. I didn't know what that was. I didn't know if I had to go to school or what the training or background looked like to do this kind of thing. But I figured school probably wouldn't be a bad idea considering I had no footing at all in the industry. I went and talked to my guidance counselor and that poor woman all the way up to graduation, she would check in with us and she's like, okay, what are we doing? What's our plan? What are we doing? I'm like, I'm going in the military. You don't have to worry about me. And then like 2 weeks to graduation, I'm like, JK, I'm not going in the military.
Yoink.
Maybe school. I don't know. Because if it's a hands-on school, because I was just disinterested in school. I was like, you know, I do all right. I'm an AB student, but I wasn't interested in it. She's like, yeah, we can figure out if there's a school near us. We found SIU, which is Southern Illinois University, and it's the Carbondale location. So she's like, you should really go tour the school. I went down there and toured the program. It's a bachelor's degree in aviation. Went there, toured, ended up really falling in love with the program. Your first 3 years are towards your A&P, and then your last year is actually a specialization that's offered. So you could go into avionics, you could go into heavy maintenance, which is a lot of composite and structure work, or you could do helicopter maintenance, which was super rare. And I didn't know how rare that was at the time. The only female professor in the entire program was the helicopter professor. She quickly was like, yeah, you're coming with me. So she kind of took me under her wing and she was an awesome mentor to have. So went through the program, enjoyed every minute of it. Looking back, I really missed being at school. That was a lot of fun. Those were the good old days. But I graduated school, And then I got a job here locally working for a company called Helicopters Incorporated, LE.
Yep.
So they're an ENG operator, means electronic news gathering. So we had the great big cameras mounted to the front of the helicopters for the news stations. So I traveled the country doing 300 hours, some pretty heavy duty component replacement maintenance, learned a lot really, really fast, enjoyed it, and got to see parts of the country I'd never seen before. It was kind of a perfect marrying of the two. Did that for about 3.5 years, and I now work at AirVac Life Team. I worked as a base mechanic for about a year, and now I am actually a helicopter maintenance instructor. So I get to teach people how to work on our aircrafts, get them familiarized with EMS setups, our paperwork, policies, procedures, all that stuff. So I get my guys for 2 weeks straight, kind of baptizing them into the HEMS world and then sending them out on their way.
You put them with the rotor blade on each shoulder.
Knight them, yeah.
Knight them right there. Perfect. That's awesome. That's awesome. Going into SI, let me get my acronyms right. SIUC, because right, that's what we need to call it, right? Did you find it intimidating? You find it like there's a lot to kind of take in at but where it was, or was the thirst quenched by what was being fed to you?
The first couple classes, because I was super nervous, having no aviation footing at all.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm sitting next to people, and I always use this analogy, but the guy on my right, you know, grew up flying WACOs since he was like 14 or something crazy. And then this girl, both of her parents are retired from Delta, and they were both mechanics. And so, like, everybody had a footing, it seemed like. And I was like, man, I know nothing. I didn't know what AMP was, FAR, like, none of these acronyms. They're speaking another language. And so I was really happy that they said, okay, some of you might already be ahead of the game, but guess what? Everyone has to start down here at ground zero. So this might be really boring for some of you, but for some of you, it's going to feel like you're drinking from a fire hose. And I was the latter. I had to get it or, you know,
I feel you on that. I feel you on that 100%. When I came into this industry, I literally was hired as a customer service rep for a local company here. And I literally got together. I befriended an inspector who's still kind of still there. I picked up a C-20B sump cover. I said, what is this and what does it do? And that's how I learned the Rolls-Royce 250 engines. So I feel like I 100% relate with you when it comes to like drinking from not probably a fire hose, drinking from Niagara Falls. So
yeah,
it's a lot. It was a lot of fun though. Like I said, they eased us into it. So, you know, the very first class we did was FARs, but then we also got to do aerodynamics. So we did some hands-on stuff with airfoils and learning about the different surfaces. And so they didn't just all of a sudden, bam, you know, hit the ground running. They eased us into it, which I think was a great way of doing it. It worked out well for me. I know some of the other guys might have been a little more bored, but I definitely was. I had a lot to catch up on, I felt like. But
good for you.
That was the great thing about that school, was that I just feel like they did a good job of just kind of stepping it up.
You walked out with a pretty badass certification, if I'm not mistaken, 205A1. Are you kidding me?
Thank you to our sponsor, Precision Aviation Group. Mission-critical operators and fleet managers rely on Precision Aviation Group as a worldwide leading rotor and fixed-wing MRO provider. PAG provides tip-to-tail solutions in 4 MRO segments: avionics, components, engines, and manufacturing DER services. A single point of contact gives you access to over 150 million in inventory globally, 24/7. Just call 800-537-2778. Precision Aviation Group. Others sell parts. We sell support.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is I got it and I haven't used it since I left, but I'm able to say I have it. But a couple of guys that left my class, they went to go work for forest fire contracts. And that was like the staple reason that they got hired. So the fact that the school lets you leave with that was like, that was a game changer.
Yeah. Yeah, I know those aircraft where I'm located up in Canada here, those 204, 205s are still flying and pounding the forest fires here at West there. It's I know the big machines out in the States are going to be the UH-60s and the UH-1s. I get that. But like up in Canada, you're doing, you know, 205s still, 212s, a couple of still good old dog 204s still kind of kicking around. So I know that aircraft well, and everyone's like, you know, how do you know this one? I'm just like, well, I kind of live on both sides of the border here, man. We get this. So good for you on that one.
There's a couple things that, you know, I love the fact that you went into the program, and it's an AMP program as well as a bachelor's degree that's wrapped into that. You know, I feel like a lot of the programs, it's hard to find programs that are similar to that. And I think it's just, it's so valuable for a ton of reasons. But if in the event you end up getting hurt and you're unable to use your hands as you need to in the future, like you've got something to use to propel you in a different direction. That's huge, you know?
Absolutely. Yep. We had people too that would come through the program, and because we had a management program and then there was a maintenance program. So a lot of the guys that were going through the management program were going through flight school. So that's what their bachelor's degree was going to be in, was the management side. But there wasn't anything that dictated whether or not they could take the maintenance side and still get the accreditation for the bachelor's degree. And it was in aviation. A lot of the pilots that would come through had to make the choice on which schooling they wanted to go through. Was it management or maintenance? And most of them said, well, I'm just going to do management. And my biggest argument when they would come through and tour our program is I would say, hey, you know, have you ever thought about a couple things? One, God forbid, if you ever lost your medical, what would you do? Mm-hmm. And a lot of them were like, well, I would try to use my degree in some kind of aspect, but I'm not sure what. And I said, well, if you get your A&P, that's just another FAA cert that you now have under your belt.
Right.
Also, the biggest selling point for me to get pilots to take the maintenance program was, do you want to own your own aircraft one day?
Yep.
And of course, that's everybody's, you know, a lot of people's big dream or big ticket. Yeah. Picture.
Right.
And they were like, yeah, absolutely. I'm like, well, if you're in A&P, you're going to mitigate a lot of expenses and costs, and you're going to know your aircraft really well inside and out. And so a lot of guys were like, maybe I'll take a look at the maintenance program. So it was a pretty good selling point.
It, knowing your system is inside and out as a pilot is huge. You know, to be able to kind of think through and process an EP as it's taking place, that's an advantage that I didn't have, you know? So I love that you kind of drove people in that direction. One other thing you said that I just want to touch on real quick, you said it was the good old days. And there's a saying that you wish you knew it was the good old days when it was the good old days. And man, it's so weird in life how sometimes you don't realize it and you're in the moment. And then 5 years later, you're like, that was a good old days. And I didn't even know it then, you know?
Took my wife and my kids to age me when they said, you know, you've been doing this for 26 years. I'm like, that's where the gray is coming from. God damn it. So.
Yeah. So some of my students, they'll come into class and like we're on day two. Because it's funny, because when I walk in, they think that I'm like, they've already gotten like 2 days of HR. So when I come in, I'm like, hi, I'm going to be your instructor for the next 2 weeks. A lot of times I think they think it's more HR stuff. And then I start talking and they're like, how old are you? And then they're like, wait, no, just what year were you born? So I can realize where I was at in my career. And usually they get a good laugh out of it. I'm like, yeah, I was born in 96. And they're like, God, and I'm like, you know, they always give me trouble about it.
I was a junior in high school in 96.
I'm not even going to tell you guys. I finished high school in 91. Here we go. And that's end of that conversation.
But Faith, for you, is that kind of posed any unique challenges for you in that position, kind of the age differential?
I thought it was going to at first, but a lot of times just me recognizing the experience in the room. And I learned from every single class that I have, you know what I mean? Because these guys know and they've been doing it. So maybe one had a military background, or maybe one had a 135 background, or one had, you know, worked for a Part 91 operator for years. So he doesn't know what an MEL is or a AAIP and all these things, again, with the acronyms. So, you know, I learn a lot from them when they come into my class. So it's actually pretty cool. It's like mingling of the minds and being able to talk with them. And yeah, and even on the aircraft itself, you know, because we actually have a 206L that they get to practice on, which is pretty cool, dedicated just to us in the training department.
A straight L?
It's L1 plus what it is. Okay. They get to tinker around on it. You know, they're sometimes, you know, rattling off some stuff that I didn't know that existed before I was in aviation. So it's pretty cool. So far, so good. I've actually been really lucky. I've had a lot of good guys come through.
That's cool. You're super well-spoken, and you said something that I keyed in on. You talk about picking up on the experience of the folks that are coming through. It reminds me of our friend Clay Lacey. He's from Texas DPS, and he trains all over the world for police tactics for helicopters. And he talks about the training buffet. He goes, you know, I'm serving up this food. It's at the buffet, and you take what you like and leave what you don't. And as an instructor, you do the same thing, right? You pick up on the things that are noteworthy and that should be passed on to other folks, and you leave the stuff that maybe shouldn't. But you're basically getting the best of all the information and being able to disseminate that across all these different folks throughout different segments of the industry. So that's really cool.
John, big word, disseminate. Oh my goodness. It's Friday afternoon. What are you doing?
I made that word up.
Perfect. So you're checking the boxes here. You're looking at your career. You're saying, okay, I got to find something niche. You like working with your hands. You've clearly gone and you've got your degree and becoming an AMP and stuff. Like, what was that aha moment? Like, okay, yeah, this was a good call. Can you chalk it back to a particular incident or a series of, like, it's just because sometimes it changes. It's interesting to hear this kind of point of view. I've spoken to a couple of pilots and spoken to a couple of techs, and they all have their, it's like, it's a little, oh, my dad was really proud of me, tapping me on the back or something like that. It's that aha moment.
I think mine, like I said, my dad including me in teach, I love to learn. That was one thing. And my dad was always willing to teach. So, you know, they always say that your A&P license or any license that you're ever given is a license to learn. And so I was really curious on how the industry was going to adhere to this or how, you know, that was going to be translated over. And when I started at my place of employment, Heli Inc., they said, all right, you know, you've been spooled up basically and you understand the rules and the regs. And that's the important part of what you can and can't do with what you have. They said, so now you actually need to learn how to apply it and, you know, how to use it. And so when I got where I was going, it was funny. They assigned me a mentor that was at my place of employment. And he was my work dad. He was awesome. They were like, okay, you're going to be on projects with him. You know, you guys have the same hours and the same work days. So we're going to place you with him and he's going to show you the ropes. And thank God they placed me of all the guys. Like, he was probably the most receptive. We had the same personality and just we're able to laugh. And yeah, so I enjoyed.
Good to have that. Absolutely.
And it literally clicked. It was just that was my goal from the start, was to feel like I was going to work with my dad. And that's exactly how I felt. So, you know, just the learning and the teaching and me being able to ask a question, be like, this might be dumb, but this is my question, or this might be redundant. I know you showed me once. Can you show me one more time? I didn't catch this second half of this or whatever it may be. But he was super patient and he kept saying, oh, I'm not a teacher. I'm not a teacher. I'm not a trainer. And I'm like, dude, this was perfect case scenario for me, at least. He's a good dude. I still keep in touch with him all the time. And a lot of the guys that I used to work with over at Heli Inc., they're a good crew over there. So it was awesome. And like I said, how receptive everybody was, because being a female in the aviation, I wasn't sure. I was like, all right, I got to be tougher than nails. Like, when I come into these places, and a lot of these guys are like, oh, do you have this special tool? Oh, here, I got two in my box. Or, hey, have you ever done this before? You're like, we're going to teach you over here if you want to learn.
That's
and so
great.
They were just, everybody was super cool and inclusive. And I know not everyone might have the exact same experience that I had, but I feel like, you know, and it might just be my personality too. I'm a very much the glass is half full kind of person. I think that plays a big part.
What?
But
no.
Yeah. but I loved, as soon as I got into the field, probably about, you know, 2-3 weeks in, and just how much I was learning and absorbing, I'm like, yeah, this is cool. There's never not going to be a time when I'm not learning something. So this is perfect. I made the right choice.
I know when I was again, referencing to my buddy Bruce, who was kind of my inspector there, when I was working at, he from 26 years ago, he said the dumbest question is the one that isn't asked. Right. So it's good for that guy for taking it in and making that a very teachable figure, if you will, in your life. Good for you. And the fact that you guys are still talking together and still communicating, which is even better. So well done.
Yeah. He's a good dude. He's he doesn't give himself enough credit. That's for sure.
Mm. Yeah.
It's warming and welcoming to hear, like you said, like it's, you think you're kind of walking into a particular industry and you're just kind of like, but you know, with a bit of a challenge, but it's glad to hear that kind of welcomed you. You're probably right. It's not the same story across the board, but I'm glad it kind of happened there to you there, where they kind of welcomed you with open arms. Following your social media feeds and kind of trolling a little bit here, seeing the aircraft that you're doing your pre-buys on, and you're crossing the continent, which, could I give a shameless plug here?
No, good.
So How to Helicopter on both TikTok and Instagram is where you're going to find Miss Faith here. So I've done a little following here. I'm just seeing, like, holy smokes, you've been to some places, and looking at everything that you've, that you're, you know, you're going in and the maintenance challenges. I know from my side of the industry, the maintenance challenges for me is always materials, but what are you seeing on your side pre and post COVID? Cause I know everything post COVID is like, well, where is it? Or where are these people if they're no longer the positions that they're at? Are you seeing that with your student, like now that you're kind of a trainer in that department there, are you seeing an influx or decline?
Thank you to our sponsor, Bell. Bell proudly supports the Vertical MRO podcast and their vision to share valuable insights into helicopter maintenance, repair, and overhaul. Bell is dedicated to keeping our customers in the sky and on their missions with industry-leading global customer solutions.
Biggest thing and in the field aspect right now is parts procurement, is being able to get a hold of some things. And it's weird how some stuff lagged. We were able to have, you know, what we needed for a long time, and then all of a sudden it finally hit when we were having trouble procuring certain parts. As for people in the industry, that's probably the biggest shortage.
Yeah.
Not just parts, but people. So I think when I was in A&P school, and there was a statistic that they would always throw around, and they said by 2025, there will be 6 A&P jobs for every A&P.
Wow.
And they used to always say that over and over and over to you know, make us feel and get the warm and fuzzies that we were going to be able to get job placement. But when COVID hit, it just pushed so many people out the door for retirement, and a lot of people stepped away. And so getting back to it now, there's a shortage now more than ever. And there's such a, I feel like there's been a disconnect for a while where these manufacturers and operators and you know, all these larger entities that need A&Ps, they're like, well, we need A&Ps and we have all these listings and we have a lot of pay and all this stuff. So what's the deal? Like, why are we not getting people in the door? Well, these people don't know that this job exists.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know specifically helicopters themselves had jobs like this, you know, where, you know, the HEMS world or being in the ENG world or tourism, you know, I never would have thought, unless had it not been for enough people pointing me in this direction that knew that this job existed. That was a really big push for my social media posts and pages, was to just be transparent, because I was like, man, you know, I could have been that kid that was watching my own YouTube videos or my TikTok videos and stuff, and maybe would have been inspired. You know, some people might think it's kind of dorky and corny. I think it's cool, but yeah. You know, so I probably would have latched onto that had I had that opportunity, but it didn't exist. So yeah, that's been one of the really big driving factors for me to keep going and keep posting the stuff. But yeah, definitely the biggest shortage has been people. And I think that's across the board.
It's huge. I love that you filled, or you're filling the gap with social media, because that's how people are consuming information, especially when you're talking about recruitment and young people. You know, young people aren't going to the library anymore to look at an encyclopedia to figure out information. They're going to social media and using that as a search engine and just scrolling through stuff. And so you've filled a really, really critical portion there for the industry, whether it's, you know, on the A&P side or just aviation in general. But you look at recruitment, and women make up 50% of the population, you know, roughly. How do we encourage more females to get into this industry?
Like I said, I think just being transparent, you know what I mean? And I try to be, when I'm on my pages and my posts, that's when I'm a little bit more like educational, and I'll post like the facts and different things. But when I do my lives, that's when like people start asking comments and questions like, have you ever had any problems? You know, what's the pay look like? Is the pay different for you? Is it, I'm like, nope, here's been my experiences. I can't say the same for everybody, but also, like I said, showing, you know, the different events and different things that I'm able to attend and where it has gotten me. It hasn't been a, how should I word it? Me being a female hasn't excluded me from any opportunities. It's made a lot for me. Some people will be like, oh, they're just trying to, you know, you get some of the naysayers, the older guys that are like, oh, they just were trying to fill a demographic and, you know, you just checked a box for them. And I'm like, well, I'm like, I do a lot for this place and I feel the appreciation for them and vice versa both ways. So yeah. I'm like, I know that that was not the case. Yeah. They hired me because I was a capable human being. And that's what I try to tell people too. You know, if you just are trainable, you're already leaps and bounds ahead of most people.
Yep. Being coachable is absolutely like that. You hit the nail right on the head completely on that one. So good. Yeah. Good reference on that. Trainable is probably the right verbiage on that one. Cause a lot of people walk into something, I already know this, or I can know this, I can figure this out. Or if you're trainable, you're miles ahead of probably 50% of the class.
Oh yeah, for sure. And that's what, you know, there's places now like GA shops and different places that are looking at hiring people that are just, like I said, capable, trainable people that are in the automotive world. They need mechanics so bad that a lot of the theories and principles translate over. So if they just give the person the opportunity or the environment to learn and to adapt to it, they already know that they're successful or doing well when it comes to being in a hands-on career. So if they can just mold that person into what they need them to be, a lot of companies are starting to explore this, which when I was going through A&P school, which only a handful of years ago, it was not that way. Most people, I feel like, got their training through a two-year program, whether it be with an associate's or just the program itself to get the A&P. But anymore, there's a lot of opportunity for OJT, on-the-job training.
Yeah.
And that wasn't a thing. That was so rare anymore. It's becoming a thing because they're like, whatever we got to do to get a capable and warm-bodied person in this spot, we're going to do it. So it's opening up a lot of opportunity for young people. And I feel like a lot of them don't know that it's there.
Right.
Especially when it comes to blue collar and hands-on jobs. A lot of people have that mindset. Well, I'm not cut out for school or I don't 2-year training. That sounds really involved. Like, and I always tell people, I'm like, hey, had my college experience been like the typical students and not hands-on blue collar trade, I wouldn't have made it either.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of, like, I know up here on this side of the border here, there's a lot of on the job training apprenticeship. So it's where they're paid to learn and they can still go do their classes and do their schooling either after hours online or on the weekend. So they're like, you're right. The demand is still very, very high. And I know we're at a shortage point right now. So it's just, yeah, keep spreading the good word on that. Absolutely.
There's actually, here in, St. Louis, I can't say the name just yet, but there is a trade school and they are known for setting up colleges wherever there is a need in the industry. They have welding, they have building trades, they have automotive, they have high performance automotive. They have a lot of hands-on training that you can do and you can get a degree and an associate's degree with it. So they currently just reached out to me and said, hey, we're seeing, we've never opened up a program without the industry knocking on our door first. They said that's always been our gig because we want to make sure that there is a need for these people before we just make up some program.
Right.
They said we were just reached out to by several large aviation companies and they want to put cookie cutter aviation programs all over the country, but they want to start here with us in St. Louis. So they said, can we hire you as a consultant because this FAA thing is kind of intimidating. And so can we work on getting a program put together and, you know, sit down and have a couple meetings about what that would entail. And I was right. Like, finally, people are starting to understand, you know, they've got really big companies that are wanting to basically just shell out some money and say, hey, if you can promise us 5 techs a year, like, great. Yeah. Like, that's all we need. People are finally starting to realize that they're going to have to get ahead of the curve to get those people in the door. It's not just the bonuses and the pay and the awesome work life, which don't get me wrong, those are all very important things, but you know, you got to generate the interest because as the baby boomers leave, there's not a whole lot of folks that know that this is a really cool trade to be in.
There's so much value in the trades in general. I just saw something on social media today. It was something to the effect of, you don't see trade school students asking for student loan forgiveness because they're paying back or they've paid back their loans because they're making money. Mm-hmm. You know, there's such a disconnect with the 4-year university ideology that when you graduate, the doors are going to open up for you and you're going to have all these options. I was a 4-year grad and I walked out and I'm like, I don't see any doors open on their own, you know, versus
insert the buzzer.
One of the programs you're talking about, essentially that is what is happening. You know, you come out of these schools and you've got all these jobs available for you. So huge proponent of those programs.
So you're going to be like a professor at the helicopter version of Harvard?
No. If the school was closer, I totally would teach. But where the first location they're looking to open up, it's actually a good ways from me. But they just were like, hey, we've always opened up programs and we just had to adhere to, you know, what was needed to hand out an associate's degree. And we incorporated everything around, you know, automotive or welding or HVAC or whatever. They said these people that are at the FAA said that we have a very specific curriculum we have to teach. And I'm like, so you're starting to read part 147. And they're like, yeah. And I said, well, I've never opened up a part 147 school, so you're going to have to bear with me here. And they're like, you already know more of the acronyms than we do, so we'll take all the help we can get. I was really, really excited that that's actually going to be a thing because I've been asking so many people around St. Louis forever, like, why are there not more schools? If you need more people, you'd think that there'd be all these schools. But yeah, so that's a really exciting move that I'm starting to see is that companies are starting to reach out to these schools and say, hey, can we collab or work together or something? Because we need them and you've got a way of getting them in the door. So let's work together.
It's not good. It's not in St. Louis. St. Louis is a great city. St. Louis is a great city.
Yeah, it's one of those things when you live somewhere your whole life, you know, like I've got friends that grew up in Colorado and they're like, oh, I hate Colorado. I'm like, I would die to live in Colorado. I'm like, It's just because
I wasn't kidding. I love St. Louis. Last time I was there, like I stayed right at that Archway Hotel, whatever that Hyatt is, and I got a chance to eat that Emo's Pizza. Yeah, that's a cleaner. That, what is it? Well, they use the Provel cheese. That's what it is. So it's another shameless plug there. So yeah, went in St. Louis. Looking at your ambassadorship, by the way, congratulations on that too. Now that it's you're being ambassador of Verticon, congratulations. That's a massive, massive badge there. Talk to us about that. Like that's that, like the same thing. Were you recognized in the same, just for the sheer positivity you bring to the industry? Or
it was kind of it was really funny actually that the gal that took over the social media accounts for HAI, which is now VAI, she said, okay, you know, they've hired a social media manager. And she said, that is my job. This is a newly created position. They've kind of allowed me to run with it. And so I'm trying to get them more exposure and trying to get more people to utilize the tools that we have for the industry. So she said, I've been looking at your page. I've been following you. She said, so how do we have, and at the time, she said, how do we have 20,000 followers? And we'll post about a webinar or we'll post about something that's very educational for pilots, mechanics, whoever it may be. She said, and we only get 15 to 18 likes or views. She said, how is somebody like you with 5,000 people at the time getting 1,000 likes and comments and reviews? And she's like, a lot of what we post is very text and very word heavy. And so it's just a blast all the time. She said, I'm really trying to kind of rebrand us here. So she said, you know, can I use you as a guinea pig? She said, I really want to start this idea. A lot of big name brands have ambassadors or influencers or people that, you know, promote their company or their products. She said, our products are education. You know, it's a lot of what they provide. And so networking and know-how within the industry. She said, can we team up? She said, you'd be my guinea pig. So this is the very first one. And I got to make sure it runs well so I can add more. So she said, and this was in 21 or 22 when we first kicked it off. And she was like, okay, you know, I'll give you kind of a short list of what we're looking for and you can edit it and tweak it and tag us and post us. And I was like, okay. So at first it was very robot-y. And I said, can I kind of go rogue with this? And she's like, absolutely. So I was able to kind of post some of my lighthearted, more fun posts. Yes. And they were getting a really good return on it. So in return, it was awesome because they've got now, I think, 30-something thousand followers, and mine has since boosted as well. So it's been super beneficial and symbiotic for the both of us, which was awesome. And so my favorite part about it is every year I get to go and take one of their professional education course classes, which is usually the day before Expo opens up the floor. Sometimes they're during, but and those are usually kind of expensive per seat if you're just going to be someone like me that's not being sponsored by your, you know, operator or maintainer, which most folks are. But the fact that they let me take one of those every year and I get to promote it and get to go and see and meet these people every year has been awesome. Hoping it continues until they tell me and the fat lady has sang. So
you're on the right path, though. It's everything that I've seen so far. And kind of watching your last post here, what was your take of the West Coast side of the Verticon? Because I know this, you mentioned this was your first one. What did you think of that side of the country's show display? Stand by for a message after a word from our sponsors.
The Vertical MRO podcast is powered by Vertical Magazine, the rotorcraft industry's number one trusted multimedia resource. Visit Vertical Mag Media on YouTube to gain access to exclusive videos featuring operators in the field and more unique content from the pages of Vertical. Subscribe today to stay informed and inspired.
Thank you to our sponsor, Precision Aviation Group. Mission critical operators and fleet managers rely on Precision Aviation Group as a worldwide leading rotor and fixed wing MRO provider. PAG provides tip to tail solutions in four MRO segments: avionics, components, engines, and manufacturing DER services. A single point of contact gives you access to over 150 million in inventory globally 24/7. Just call 800-537-2778. Precision Aviation Group. Others sell parts. We sell support.
Thank you to our sponsor, Bell. Bell proudly supports the Vertical MRO podcast and their vision to share valuable insights into helicopter maintenance, repair, and overhaul. Bell is dedicated to keeping our customers in the sky and on their missions with industry-leading global customer solutions.
So as we come in for our final landing with today's maintenance journey with Faith Ortega, remember that keeping your helicopters in top-notch condition not only ensures safe skies, but also fosters a culture of excellence in aviation. From tip to rotor to tail, every component plays a crucial role in the symphony of flight. So, whether you're tightening a bolt or conducting a comprehensive inspection, embrace the responsibility and privilege of safeguarding the skies. Until next time, keep soaring, keep maintaining, and keep the rotor turning smoothly. Thanks for letting us, the Helicast team, into your world. Blue skies and safe flights to all. Val, over and out.
This has been the Vertical MRO Podcast. Join us next time for another edition of the Vertical MRO Podcast, brought to you by Vertical Helicasts.